When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
Today, I'm excited to share something that's truly close to the journey that I'm going through of healing and growth. Mindful wellness is a revolutionary way to approach weight loss, hormone replacement, substance abuse, and overall wellness. I have been on and off the program for several months now. I gained a little bit of weight. I'm trying to lose that weight. I had my hysterectomy. I love working with Dr. Gupta and staff, Dr. Shah for my hormones. It's just been the best process for me and the best experience. At Mindful Wellness, the belief is that sustainable health changes come from understanding and addressing the entire spectrum of our lives, not just prescribing medication like a lot of these doctors do and moving on. It's a holistic approach that places you, the individual, at the center of the healing process. Right now, they're making this comprehensive care more accessible through incredible specials, inviting you to start a journey that truly understands and caters to your need. What stands out about Mindful Wellness is their commitment to creating a partnership with each person that you work with. I truly love working with them. I'm so excited to partner with them. I know if you reach out today, you will get the support that I've gotten, and I can't rave enough about Dr. Gupta and staff. Go to Mindful Wellness today. That's mindfulweightloss.com and start your journey to a better and healthier you. Hi, everybody. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. If you're watching right now, I have a rash all over my face and I'm wearing my glasses, which we're making progress in wearing the glasses, even though I hate them. And I said last episode, I wouldn't talk about glasses, but I'm talking about them again. My face is so red. I broke out in some weird, I don't know what it is. Because I think, well, I'm very real with all of you. And Marie, I know you're just meeting me, but whatever, let's get down to it. I had my hysterectomy, which I've loved talking about lately. And my hormones took this like wild dip. And I have been in such a massive depression because my body, even though they left my ovaries in, sorry for the boys that are listening, I know this is hot, my hormones took such a huge dip that all of a sudden I was like in my room, like listening to like Celine Dion, like all by myself and like crying like 24 hours a day. So then I go to my hormone doctor who I'm obsessed with, shout out Dr. Shah, and she puts me on this estrogen patch. And so yesterday or the day before, I started breaking out in this horrific red rash. And then I had to go to pick up with all like the mom Karens around. So I'm like looking like horrible with like red rash all over my face. So I was looking down and just ran into one of my friends. I know this is, you just met me, Marie. I'm a talker. And I Google what's wrong with me. Don't ever Google anything. So then I look and it's like, if you are breaking out in a rash, immediately like call your doctor and basically go to the ER. So then I call my doctor. I'm standing there with all the like my mom friends and freaking out thinking I'm dying. And then it turns out I think it was like this new product that I used on my face because it was only on my face and my neck, but it won't go away. That's my intro for today. I thought it would be way more interesting than that, but that's where we're standing right now.
We've all been put here for a reason and we all deserve acceptance. Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
I'm a trauma survivor from a really young age, and I have been diagnosed with complex PTSD in the past few years. I've been surrounded by death and abuse much of my life. I've been dragged through the mud and have been to the point of not wanting to go on anymore. Through my interviews with other survivors, I've learned that there is a way out. From recovering to surviving and thriving, we all have the strength to come out the other side.
You are listening to Judging Megan.
Everyone, I'm so excited. As usual, we're starting a solid 30 minutes late because I messed something up and when I was trying to hook up my new stupid microphone, and we're recording on Zoom today. I want to introduce my guest, Marie Quintana. She is gorge. First of all, if you're watching this on YouTube, gorge, and an author, a mom, and a former business executive, former badass, still a badass, but in a new, we're going to talk about all the things. So Marie, welcome to the podcast. I know that was not a great intro. I'm sorry.
I am so excited to be here. This is going to be such a fun time with you. I'm telling you.
Okay. I'm excited to meet you. Okay. So we talked before and I was sweating because I couldn't get anything to work. I'm a total spaz. So sometimes when people, I love Karina, who you work with, I had to say to Marie, please ask Karina, I'm not this bad, because I think that sometimes I scare people when we're setting up to start recording. And today was a specific example of that. Let's start with you. Let me start with, number one, how are you doing today?
What a great beginning. I mean, I started thinking about your background and my background. I'm like, we've been through so much. This recording is nothing. We're going to get through it and we're going to go ahead and record this session no matter what happens.
I know. I'm excited to have you on because when I read your bio, I was like, this woman's amazing. Has this vast background in business and working for these huge companies and just writing a book and all the things. I love supporting women. I actually started this new thing on Fridays. So if you follow me on Instagram, it's not new, other people I'm sure do it, but when you have a public platform or a podcast or you're an author, there's so much competition between women. And I've learned that the best way to deal with women not supporting women and being assholes, excuse my language, is by supporting them. So I'm now every Friday going to be supporting another woman, whether it be an author, a podcaster, even a clothing business. I don't care what it is, because I would rather lift other women up than tear them down. And we have such an issue with that. Don't you agree?
Oh, I love that. I love that. My career has been about lifting women up.
Yeah.
We lift the ones underneath us and we move the ones above us even higher. So there's no competition. I mean, that's what we're really here for, right? So
100%. And coming from corporate America, though, there's not a lot of that, because I found, because I worked in corporate America, that most of the women that I worked under, I'm definitely an alpha. I'm definitely opinionated. I've talked about this. They don't want to see a lot of times women succeed. So it's always refreshing when you do find women that are let's not compete with each other. We're awesome. We wouldn't be at war and all the things that we deal with if women were ruling the country, So let's support each other and not be awful to each other.
I love doing this, Megan, really. Yeah. Whatever I can do to help you, let me know, because I'm with you.
Well, I'm going to be supporting you. So just watch out.
Okay. With you.
So let's talk about your childhood. So I know that the book's coming are already out now, and we're going to talk about that at the end. But let's talk a little bit about where you're from and your whole background. We'll start there.
Okay, great. So I was born in a place called Pedro Betancur in la provincia de Matanzas.
Okay, let me repeat that, everyone. Here we go. I'm joking. No, I can't do it.
And so, I used to always ask my mom, where was I born? So I was born in Cuba. And the town is so small that literally you drive through it and you've passed the town. So it's a very small town, 2 hours outside of Havana. And I lived in Cuba for about 4 years during the early 60s, right as communism took over the country. And my grandfather was a farmer. He was actually the third largest rice farmer in Cuba, and his great-grandfather had farms. And so it was a lovely small town 2 hours outside of Havana where my grandfather was such an amazing man. Like, he was the owner kind of the farm and the town, but everything he did was for his family. So he built a barbershop for his brother, a clothing store for his sisters. Like, he was always reaching out and helping others. Mm-hmm. And my father was in the sugar industry. And then one day the country changed and Fidel Castro took over the country. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was a young child. And in fact, I write about this in my book, where I started hearing gunshots in the street. And the military came and took my grandfather one night and threw him in jail because he owned land. And I was so scared that I started crying. And, you know, I couldn't stop crying. My mom said I wouldn't eat. And she took me to a pediatrician who actually said I needed to go to a psychiatrist. This isn't a young child. So they drove me to Havana, and the psychiatrist said that it was a situational conflict. And what they did is they gave me Play-Doh. Can you believe it? Play-Doh to just calm me down. And my mom, you know, couldn't keep me in nursery school. So fast forward through all of that, when my father, after the Bay of Pigs, saw mm-hmm. that the country was going to be communist, he had been working in the United States for a period of time and was able to come to the United States and request that my mother, brother, and I come to live in the United States. And at that time, the commercial flights were going to shut down Havana Airport. My mother, brother, and I were so lucky to get on the last flight out of Havana, which is the name of my book. We were on the last flight. It happened to be a Delta flight that shut down Havana Airport, and it flew to New Orleans. So we landed in New Orleans and literally moved to a housing project. So I lived in a refugee project with my family. We were only able to take 40 pounds of clothing out for the whole family. And I go into a lot more detail in my book in that first yeah. chapter. And it was through my mother's eyes that I was able to actually, you know, write all of the emotion and everything that she went through. And so, Megan, you know, I was the oldest. I was the oldest in the family, and my family didn't speak English, and I had to learn to speak English very rapidly. And so we left New Orleans and settled in a very small town outside of New Orleans called Reserve, Louisiana, on the Mississippi River. We were the first Hispanics there. And it was hard, and it was hard. And, you know, assimilation is very difficult. I mean, when you're living through as a child, you're like, why aren't people understanding us and making fun of us? And we can't. I was telling my parents, don't speak Spanish when we go out to the stores because people are going to look at us and, you know, talk about us. So it was.
Can I just ask you? I mean, that is the complex PTSD. I'm sure you have complex PTSD. I was diagnosed from childhood. So, like, you were so young being hearing the gunshots. I mean, it breaks my heart because you think about what's going on all over the world with all these wars and how many young kids are going through the whole cycle of trauma again. And what, like,
traumatic. You're absolutely
you don't deserve it. You're a child. Like, you know, like, all kids want to do is go to school, learn, run around. What was that like? Just going back a little bit and going back to that, the Play-Doh story too, like that they just probably didn't know how to deal with it. How you must have been really little. You were in preschool or something?
I was 3 years old, three.
Okay. Yeah. So I
remember the feeling of fear. Like, I don't remember everything that happened, but I remember I was so scared. And I do remember that the only place I felt safe was under my bed. Or under my parents' bed, actually, because I think I was sleeping in a crib. But I was so scared. And my mom said it got to the point where if a stranger would walk into the house, I would start crying and run and dive under the bed. So, you know, I did know what to expect. The other thing that's really scary for children that are going through this kind of situation, they look at the adults. My mom was crying. My grandmother was crying. You know, you could hear the worry and the people coming in saying, what are we going to do? And you know, I can remember my uncles, they also had to go hide from the government because the government was going to put them in jail because they were property owners. And so it's not just what you're seeing, it's what you're hearing, it's what they're going through, and you can't escape it, right?
It's like constant stress, constant, like the level of like being, and adults can have fully formed brains. So they're able to be like, this is what's going on. Whereas a young kid, the first 3 years of your life are really when you gather that information, and that trauma can stay with you for the rest of your life. I know that I lost my sister really young. So I've always had that trauma hidden away. And like you, I don't necessarily remember it, but I have like flashbacks of it, you know? And so
I have flashbacks of my mom going to the airport that day, and they took all of her jewelry, like the jewelry my father had given her, her rings. And she started crying because they went through her bag and started taking her belongings, which, you know, were personal. It wasn't like the monetary piece. It's just that they meant so much to her. Yeah. And I can remember her tears, and I was so scared, right? I mean, the airport was chaotic. Everything was chaotic. And then you land in a country and you're like, where are we going to live? What are we going to do? And your parents are constantly worried, right? So they're worried, like, where are we going to find work? Where are we going to live? So all of that, it's such a traumatic time. I mean, and you know, it's really interesting because I had a younger brother, and then I had one that was born later in life. Mm-hmm. I don't think he went through as much trauma as I did. I was the oldest. I was 18 months older than he was. And I think I was just like taking it in. But the other side, I think in some ways I was taking it in and then feeling like I had to fix it. Like as a child, like, where did that come from? But I really think in my heart, I felt like I want to make it right for my parents. And, you know, it's this one thing that I've always done for my parents. I've taken care of them and I've always done everything I could for them. But it's like this underlying feeling. And I think it came from those times when I couldn't escape it, and I wanted to fix it for them.
Let me ask you a question. Do you feel like, because I can relate to that in a way. Do you feel like you're always like in life ready for the next thing?
Oh my gosh. All the time. It's like, I am so ready for it. And I'm so spiritual.
Yeah,
so
me too.
I have such a strong belief that God is constantly putting things in front of me that I'm to act on, but I know it's coming, and sometimes it comes and it's so huge. And I'm like, dear Lord, are you kidding me? Is this coming my way? This is really big, but constantly. And a lot of it has been adversity. I mean, it's not like good things come, but then I've got the adversity, right?
Yeah. No, I'm asking that because of the, like being so young, sometimes I think, and I'm always overanalyzing everything, every situation I'm in, everything I say, I overanalyze everything. But I do think a lot about like children and how trauma like affects them throughout their life. And I use my own situation to try and understand other people. But I just think, I was thinking about this the other day and somebody was telling me something and I was like, well, if I had to do that, then I would figure out this, this, and this, and I would find the way out. And a lot of people really can't relate to that. It's like trauma is different for everybody. And some one person's trauma is just as important as your trauma or my trauma. But what, when you have it so young, I think, you know, there's something in you where you have like this fight or flight thing. And in some ways I think of it as like a superpower of mine, but in other ways it's like also like this awful thing that I never feel. I get emotional, by the way, Marie. I never feel like I can escape it. And I always feel like I'm ready for the next thing. And I don't know. I'm asking you that because I'm sure you can relate to that.
I'm actually having like a moment of like, oh my gosh, you're like touching on such a special place in my heart. Mm-hmm. That probably I haven't had this conversation with other people before because you're so right. I mean, you know, when I meet someone, they're like, oh, you're Hispanic. Oh, that's great. You came from Cuba. Oh, that's great. Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I always look at them like, you don't know my story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it brings tears to my eyes because they don't know that little girl. That little girl that was so scared, and that little girl that wanted to hide, and that girl that, you know, little girl that cried. And then you're right. I mean, I have this unbelievable feeling like the next shoe's going to drop, right? Something's going to happen and I got to be ready. And so you're on guard in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. You're not totally relaxed because, you know, it, first of all, you know, it can happen, right? Mm-hmm. It happened. And like people say, oh, it'll never happen to me. It happened. Like a very traumatic situation happened when you're very young. And, you know, I mean, everybody goes through counseling and you kind of unwind all these different things and decisions that you make and why did you make them? But, you know, those moments, I don't think I probably have spent enough time really kind of going deeper into that and what, you know, what that has done to mold the person that I am. And, you know, I mean, I can, like I always tell people, I can walk the fire and get to the other side. And no, I can't. But when I take a breath and I say, how did I do that? I did it because that little girl started in a really traumatic situation. And she learned some things that, unfortunately, you almost have to go through it to know it, right? I mean, you can't.
100%.
Unless you go through it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I like to do is like take myself out of, and I'm learning this as I get older. I mean, age, I hate aging. I talk about it all the time. I'm super vain. But I also think of it as just such a superpower and a strength because I'm learning so much. But I do think of my little three, like I was two when my stuff happened, that I look at that little two-year-old and I just want to like hug her. And I think that you want to hug your little self and say, it's okay. The other piece of what you said too, that struck me is when you're a child of war, because you were a child of war, you probably have a lot more compassion for people that are struggling to flee. And I'm not trying to get political because I do sometimes, but just, I think that people need to take a step back and understand, you know, that there's migrants coming into this country and it's a big problem and nobody will say it's not, but just like take yourself out of it and think about those young children and those parents that are like leaving. I live in California. We have a major issue. You live in Texas, but just like take the human component of it, of like, the trauma that that young child that's being crossed over a river because they're going through such turmoil in their own country that their parents are willing to pick them up out of a crib and escape to like basically have the chance of probably getting shot and killed or dying in the elements. Like, I wish that people would like kind of understand that and come from more of a place of compassion. And I'm wondering how you feel about that without really getting political, because everyone knows it's an issue, but it's just something I think about. And especially with your story of like, I'm sure the racism that you encountered and the, you know, people just not understanding, like, why aren't you speaking English? Like all the things you must have encountered. Do you mind speaking on that?
Absolutely. No, I don't mind. I mean, and you're right. I have such a huge heart. I mean, these children did not ask to be there. Mm-hmm. Right. That's in the middle of their prime, you know, baby age. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, when I put this book out, my daughter works in the tech world and she works a lot with immigrants in San Francisco from India and other countries who have read my book. Man, I couldn't believe this, who have related to the story from an immigrant standpoint, from India and from all these other places. And they're like men that say, you know what? I was never able to talk about it as a child. I was never able to talk about it as an adult. And here there are executives in the tech world in San Francisco. And they're like, you're speaking our story. Like you're speaking the pain that I went through that I could never share with anyone. Like they've been afraid to talk about it.
Maybe, but why? Why can't they?
And maybe because it makes them weak. Maybe because I don't know. It's not right. We should always be able.
We have to tell more of these stories and humanize what happened to everybody.
You're because right. You know what?
Yeah.
Her boss, I couldn't believe it. Her boss wanted to have a half hour conference call with me last week. And, you know, he's from, you know, the Middle East. And he said, I just want you to know, because you were so transparent and you put your life out in the book, she goes, it is my life too. And I just wanted to have this conference call with you. And I want to talk about it with my team because I've never been able to talk about it. You're giving me permission to talk about my story. And right there in the conference call, he starts crying and telling me his story. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he had to leave Beirut and he had to go here. He missed his wedding. I mean, horrible stories about his family being, you know, split. And so, you know what? We're all human, Megan. And that's the beautiful story about it. And once we tell our story from our heart, and once we're not perfect, like you always said, I mean, but we've gone through this trauma. We have hurt. We have pain. And when we know our story, and I always say, you don't know me unless you've walked a day in my shoes. Mm-hmm. Understand us. Understand me from who I am and where I've come from. Then you can really open up. And let me tell you something. The relationships afterwards are so much more meaningful. I mean, you get to a point in time where you just like, you're just taking this in and it's making you a better person for knowing their story.
And I agree.
And really what it's about. I mean, I'm so fortunate to be talking to you because I really applaud you doing this and allowing other people to share their stories from their hearts, because that's really what it's about, right?
Yeah, I think, I really think it's important to humanize what you're doing and saying. So going backwards a little bit, you talk so much about like the trauma and like what happened in your childhood. And then we talked about the piece, which is so important, which is getting past some of this, like moving to the US, what it was like. Can you kind of go more into that with what it was like being new in the country and not speaking English and how people treated you? Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and like I said, it was very difficult because I was the oldest child and I just felt so sorry and bad for my parents. So that was another component of, you know, being a child and going through this. When we moved to a small town in Reserve, Louisiana, we were the only Hispanics there. And I talk about this chapter in my book. I call it the White Dress Day. This really epitomizes what I went through because I was trying to fit in into the school and I was being teased and called names every day. And I didn't understand the teacher. And one day the teacher says, we're going to have picture day. And she says, we're going to be dressed in whatever. And I understood all white. I ran home and told my mom I needed to find an all white outfit somehow, which we didn't have any money, but she somehow found a way to get material. She sewed a white shirt and a white skirt. We were able to borrow some white shoes and white socks. And I went to school. My dad took me to school that day. I never forget it, in this complete white outfit. And we had this rickety dick car that, you know, my dad had borrowed from someone. And I can remember pulling into the schoolyard and looking out at the schoolyard. And there were children with every color of the rainbow. And I realized I got the instructions wrong. And I can remember, I mean, this story still brings me to tears, because I remember looking at my dad and saying, I can't do this. You've got to take me home.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, you know, he pulls up to where he was going to drop me off. And he says, you know, you need to get out of the bus. I said, Daddy, please. I said, I'm going to be sick. I literally felt like I was going to vomit. And he's like, no, you know, we've been through so much and we've been able to get through it. And this is going to be a really hard day for you, but you're going to be able to get through this day and you're going to be able to get through other days. And I love you and you need to go. And I can remember going out of the car, shaking, so upset. And that day was horrible, horrible. I mean, they pointed fingers, they teased me. But out of that day came this whole realization. I call it my defining moment.
Yeah.
And since then, I've had so many defining moments like that, which were such a difficult time that I had to get through. But I got through the day and I realized that, you know, we're going to have to just pull together as a family and help each other when we go out. And that's when I decided, you know, okay, well, don't speak too loud. Try not to speak Spanish. You know, and then later I started making friends and, you know, bringing friends. And I went through this whole cultural issue. That's another thing, is that I got to a point where I didn't want to be Cuban anymore. I didn't want to be Hispanic. I just wanted to be American. It was so difficult for me. It was so emotionally hard for me to be living in these two worlds. Yeah. And I just wanted one world to go away. And I just wanted to be American. And I talk about that in the book, because for me, it was like, you know, and the other thing is, like, my parents couldn't watch Spanish TV. They didn't have it. I mean, the only thing they could find was like Lucy and Desi Arnaz, and, you know, and Desi Arnaz was being made fun of all the time because he was funny. But I mean, we thought, oh, well, Cuban is a Cuban on TV, but everybody laughs at him, you know? we didn't have like Telemundo and Univision and all those shows. And people forget, you know, it's 3% of the population of the United States was Hispanic. It was like, really, it was a small, small group.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult, you know? So I think what it did to me, going back to the trauma, what it did to me is that I wanted to close off the part about being Hispanic. And I write about that. Let me tell you something. It was really hard to write this book. I mean, talk about being vulnerable and really, you know, putting all of your feelings out there. You know, like I said, it was one of the most courageous things I've ever done, is to write about this kind of thing where I didn't feel like I fit in and I didn't want to be Hispanic. So I moved away from my culture for as much as I could. I mean, you know, I got married to someone with an American name, and then I'm like, okay, well, that's it. I'm not Cuban anymore. I'm this other name. And so, you know, all of this is going
on. It's like a horrible identity crisis. It's so unfair. It's so unfair to have to like not understand. And you were still a kid. Like, what's wrong with me? Why am I like, why do I have to be different? Right.
Right. Right. And then if you go back and you look at all the reasons why, you're like, now I get it. I understand why I had to do that. It was just survive. Right. Mm-hmm. I had to survive for me, but I had to survive for my family too. And many times they kind of looked weird and they kind of did different things that they shouldn't do. And we always ate Cuban food. And I'm like, I'm not having anybody over here. We have to eat American food. We've got to eat those crawfish. Like, we're not eating those things, those bugs. We're not eating that, you know, the American, I mean, so it's all, you know, part of just getting through, especially your teenage years. I mean, I can remember going through the teenage years, and I write about this in my book. I went out with this one guy and I was so excited. I met him. I was probably in high school and he was, I think, a freshman in college. Maybe I was a junior in high school. And we had dated for, you know, a month or two. And one day he says, I need to stop by my house. He lived outside of New Orleans, and run and get something in his house. And so I was in the car and he said, you need to get down on the floor because my father does not like Cubans. Like, no. In the floor of the car, so his father doesn't see that I was sitting in there.
So was that like a life defining moment, like that you realized?
Not a total defining moment, but it was so hurtful.
Yeah.
It was so hurtful. Like, he doesn't like them. Like, what have we done? What have I done? Right.
I think that this is so common though. I'm thinking back on like a story that there was a boy in my class and he was Italian, and his mom would make him like Nutella sandwiches, like when we were kids. And I went to a very small, like Catholic school. Like, everybody was from DC. I grew up in DC. Everyone was from the area. And we had this one boy in our class, and he was from, like, his parents moved here and he was from Italy, and he had different traditions and different things that nobody else in the class could understand. And I do remember like kids kind of making fun of him because of what he would bring to eat for lunch. And I think that I know that things have changed, you know, meaning like the, just how people have to like come to our country and really adapt to like being American and the American traditions. But I would hope that like, in time, people talk more about, well, this, they come from like so-and-so, and like, this is what we celebrate. Whereas I remember the boy nobody ever really talked to us, like our teachers, nothing about why he ate, you know, Nutella sandwiches for lunch every day. I think it's really about educating kids about this and parents educating their kids about the differences, right? Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. This time of year is the worst. I feel like I can't do anything and I can't enjoy my dinner because I can't taste my food, and I can't work out because I feel tired and distracted. I can't even feel like I can host this show because my voice sounds like a duck. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. I feel like I've been using Claritin D for probably a few months now, and I have really noticed a difference. I can work out, I'm not feeling like my eyes are watering and my nose is all stuffed up. I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
As I'm celebrating that and
welcoming
that, you know, but you're right. People don't talk about it. And then think about what the child goes through, right? Mm-hmm. Think about what he felt like when he was being teased, because that's the whole thing. So back to the trauma, all those moments add up, right? I mean, we are who we are because of all the moments that we've had in our lives, right? And they all come together and they make us who we are, good, bad, whatever, you know, and they make us stronger. They make us weaker. You can get through adversity, but those are so hard for kids to go through. And, you know, and you know, there's other things going on with kids, but I think it's just about being really open to people coming from, you know, different walks of life, you know, not even just, you know, from a different country, but just the differences that we bring and the uniqueness that each of us have that makes us who we are and how beautiful it is that, you know, I'm not exactly like the other person. And it took me a long time, Megan. So, you know, fast forward through my whole story, I ended up going back to Cuba. So the whole story is I took my mom back. So my cousin is a bishop in the Catholic Church. I literally went back with Pope Benedict. It was a big, big deal. It was to celebrate the Virgin Mary of Cuba. La Virgen de Cobre was her 100th anniversary. And so we went on a plane and my mom thought she would never go back, like, you know, after 50 years. And so I took her back. I took her back to our home, which was, oh my gosh. I mean, so emotional. And I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met an aunt who had my baby book. She had been saving my baby book all these years. And there was a little piece of hair in it from my baby hair in the book. And I mean, it was just like, you say this. She goes, I say this because I thought one day I might see you. We can return this to you. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, there's so much grieving that goes with it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like even when my dad passed away, he wanted to be buried next to his parents. He never saw them again after we left. You know, families are split. This amazing love of just family that sees each other all the time. And, you know, and then remembering and then going back. So when I went back, you know, I thought it was going to be like an amazing trip to give to my mother. And what it was is an amazing trip to give to myself. I mean, it just humanized me, right? Not that I didn't need to be, but it's sort of like somewhat closure for me in ways.
Because you were stripped of what you knew. You were stripped of a huge piece of you.
Right.
I was actually telling somebody, like, this is a side story. One of my good friends the other day, I was talking about my childhood and I grew up in this house that I loved. It was on Weatherwood Court in Potomac, Maryland. And my dad died when I was 13. And my mom married this like horrible man and he was abusive and an alcoholic and awful. And he made us sell my childhood home that I loved so dearly. And I was just telling my friend Yvette this the other day. I was like, I wish I could go back, and this makes me emotional too, and buy my childhood home and like see it again, because it was such a huge part of me and my, and like, I was like my safe and happy place. And then I never had like a safe and happy place after that. After like I lost my dad, it wasn't safe and happy anymore. So I can relate so much to like going back in time and before, you know, like even being three and like when the bombs and all that stuff or like the shootings and stuff happened, you still have an identity that's such a huge part of you, which is Cuban. And you had to push that down for so long that it must have been such a breakthrough and so freeing, and like getting the baby book and all of that stuff. It's like such a gift that I think a lot of people will never get, you know, most people will never get that had to flee.
Such a gift. I mean, I, you know, again, I look at all the different moments that, you know, God has put in my path. And I think this, you know, such a God moment for me. And this is when my cousin, who's a bishop, turned around and he said, it's now time for you to write your book. And that was sort of like a defining moment too. We were on the airplane actually on the way home. And there's a whole other story about that. I was giving out rosaries at the, you know, at the mass, and I was caught on national television giving out rosaries. And I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to get out of the country because it was illegal.
Yeah.
And people at the airport knew that I was giving out rosaries. It was, anyway, I did get out, but I won't go back. But it was healing. And, you know, it's not one of those healings that just like heals that moment. It's a healing that continues healing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the book was healing. The book is healing. I mean, and I think whoever reads it, you know, it's, like, you know, it's like I said, it took courage to put your life out there and be very transparent about it. But it's a healing part. And it was a God calling to say, you know, if you went through it, there might be other people going through something that maybe you could help them to and inspire them that, you know, healing, it takes a lifetime. It takes a lifetime, Megan. I mean, you know that. And I've had to heal from many other things since. And I, you know, you're constantly going through times in your life that are so hard, but that moment, and what a gift that I took my mom back. I mean, she's 96 years old today. She couldn't go back now. It was a moment in time. It's like, don't miss that moment in time when it comes to you. And it's like, it's never going to come again. Right. And it's just so beautiful.
Well, I know that for the sake of time, because I could talk to you for 4 hours, but I want to know, like, I know that you continue to go through struggles in life. You know, you work, which is, I want to hear briefly, like, if that's okay, about like working up the ladder in corporate America. Are you comfortable just like touching on that? Because I think it's so inspiring that, you know, like you, your whole story of becoming what you were. But also I want to say, when you tell all this stuff to me, it really reminds me and wants me to tell you how, I always say this and people are probably like, you're so weird, but I'm so proud of you, because I think in life, like, I'm Catholic as well. It makes me emotional. My spirituality is huge to me, and I think it saved my life in a lot of ways. And so I love that, hearing that story, but I talk a lot about purpose-driven lives. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your purpose on this planet? And before we started recording, you were like, you know, talking about the book coming out and a lot of stuff. And I just want you to know, like, just you sharing this story with me and my listeners, you never know. There's somebody out there that's listening and is like, you know what? Like, maybe I need to share my story of being like coming to this country and like being ashamed of who I was and my background and fleeing my whole life to like really talk about who my true identity is and tap into that. And so I really believe just meeting you and like, I mean, my God, you're beautiful, physically beautiful, and your soul is beautiful. It's so touching to meet somebody that really wants to help other people. And I see that in you, and it's really a true gift that you have and that you've been given. And I hope you know that.
You know, I have such a responsibility. I feel a huge responsibility. God's giving me this. And, you know, when I wanted to run away from that book, he kept saying, you need to do it. You need to do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, my legacy is opening the doors for others, which could just mean, I just need a conversation with you, Marie. I just need your help. I mean, whatever it is, like God's kind of made me a vessel of just being able to know that you can come to me and I'm going to be who I am, you know, because I've been through it, right? I've been through the fire. And the book, and just to go back to the professional question you asked, the book is really personal. So I didn't put any of my professional, because, you know, they're all titles, but yeah. I've been so blessed. My story is going to be like, are you talking about the same person? But I started my career as, believe it or not, as a social worker, and then moved in to work for IBM as a systems engineer. And you're like, okay, wait a minute. Like, how did you do that? So IBM at the time had these courses, your 18-month course. I learned assembler programming, which is like the left brain, right brain. I learned because I wanted to take the hardest courses at IBM. I wanted to be an engineer if IBM was going to hire me. I didn't want to do the marketing because I thought that was too easy. So I did that. And I was so fortunate. I was a systems engineer. And then I went into marketing, exec marketing for IBM. And I worked for them for many years. I went on to work for many companies, but I did go to PepsiCo, and I was vice president of technology there during a time when they were acquiring Tropicana, Gatorade, Quaker Oats. I literally led the whole organization and some of the consolidation of the technology for about 5 years. And then I was senior vice president of multicultural sales and marketing, and prepared the strategy for the multicultural markets and Hispanic products, and did a lot across.
This isn't impressive at all. I just want you to know.
Marketing and sales. And then I did some startups. And recently I was chief marketing officer of Tenet Healthcare and executive vice president of communications. So anyway, put that aside.
Very impressive.
I've been blessed. And those things, you know, every role that I've had people in my life that I've taken care of, that I've been with, employees that needed me for one reason or another. So, you know, I'm there to share more than just the role. I'm really to give of myself.
Yeah.
And that's what I look at it. But from a personal standpoint, I've also gone through a lot of hardships. So while I was going through a very difficult divorce from my first husband, my son was diagnosed with mental illness. And it was a very, very difficult time where it's like, you know, the only thing I could think of during those days was to come home and go into my bed and read the Bible, or because I was reading Job at the time. I thought, this is the only way I can figure myself out. It was a very, very difficult time. It was a very horrible divorce. It went on for 2.5 years and, you know, couldn't shut it down. And, you know, he had my oldest son had Asperger, and then later, you know, developed, you know, just manic and had some issues. So he went into mental hospital. It's very difficult. I was an executive having to fly back and forth to New York and deal with as a single parent. And then I had two other kids. I had twins that were just entering high school, girl, boy. I don't know how I did it, because they were like all over the place. All the kids would be at my house. And so, you know, God gave me the fortitude to do that. And so fast forward through all of that, with three kids, I found the love of my life, you know, 10 years ago. We are now married, but one of the things that happened was we were married in 2017, and I decided to have the wedding in Florida because my family's in Florida, my mom's in Florida. We were all getting ready to leave when my oldest son started to have some symptoms that I knew he could not get on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, he just needed to go back and get a little bit of his medication updated. And so I felt it was one of those times. And so I told him he's better to stay here. We would go to the wedding and then have a bigger party when we came back. And fast forward through all that, while I was in, when I was in Florida, he was hospitalized. And we had our wedding on October 14th. In Florida with my mom, all my family. I flew back to Dallas, and that was a Saturday we got married. On Monday, we flew back, and Tuesday morning at 2:00 in the morning, I got a call that my son had passed away. And what had happened was he was in this place where they were looking at his medication, and they didn't read the medical records to give him the right medication. They gave him the wrong medication, and he had a pulmonary embolism. And I was
so
notified.
Sorry. How old was he?
He was 32.
Oh.
So I had a wedding on Saturday
mm-hmm.
and a funeral the next Saturday. So all my family that went to the wedding flew then to Dallas for the funeral. So, you know, you go and you look at, you know, God and you're like, there's no way. I mean, how could this happen? I mean, how could this be like a moment in time where so much loss? And, you know, to move forward from there, you know, the darkest of darks. And I will tell you, the treasures of the night is where you see God's grace, where the angels come from places you don't even imagine and carried me. They carried me through this. My children, one of them took off 3 months from work and stayed with me. The other one took off another 2 months. And, you know, it was so amazing. Like 6 months after this happened, there was an executive at Tenet whose son had passed away the year before. And he said, you need to come work with me. And I knew him from before. I ended up going back to Tenet Healthcare and working as a chief marketing officer about 8 months afterwards, and was able to, you know, just pull together this beautiful, beautiful organization and, you know, just caring for people, right? It was a way of me giving back to care for people and to care for others. And my son, you know, I mean, he's with me. He's with me all the time. I mean, we go together to places and we have a scholarship for him. In fact, they're going to do it on Monday, servant leader scholarship that they give him, you know, for the school every year. And it's just such a, you know, it's like, you don't know what's ahead of you. You don't know why God prepares you for things. You know, I started looking at this thing and I thought, you know, it's like a patchwork of all these different life events that happen. And you know that they happen for a reason. And I've come to conclusion that they happen because I'm supposed to pull them together and help others. I get this moment in time where I feel like this is not a coincidence. It happened to me because I'm here to help others. And that's really what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, it's you don't know. Life is just.
I think, sorry to talk over you, but I think in the beginning when I talked to you about, sorry, that's sad, is that you, from a young age, were a fighter. Like, we're fighters, you know? I like to say, I mean, I've lost my sister, my dad, my very best friend, very tragically, lost babies. Like, you know, I've gone through it like you in a different way. But I think there's a reason why I asked you that, because it's something that it's like they say a cross that you have to bear, but you don't want to bear the cross. And the loss of a child is like more painful than anything else that they say that you can go through in life. But taking what you did, like what you went through in that loss, and turning it around. Sometimes I wonder if the things that I hadn't gone through in my earlier life, or you hadn't gone through in your earlier life, would have had a different outcome, right? Because the fighter in you went, wait a second, no, I'm going to pull myself together because this is what I do. This is what I've been taught. And I'm going to help others with this.
Yeah.
So like the biggest gift that you can be given in life, I believe, is that number one, God's really close to you. And I think that you know that. I say all the time that they're just in the next room. So my listeners are probably like, shut up, Megan, you say that all the time. But I really, really believe that. I really believe my dad's in the next room. My sister, my very best friend, is more than like in the next room. I think she's like right next to me right now. She's super close. And they're all just like waiting for us.
Yeah.
And so your son's there waiting for you. And he's like, you know what? You still have work to do. So we're going to give you this amazing new partner and this new husband, and he's going to be there to take care of you and help heal you. But you still have work to do. And you're, Marie, like an incredible, incredible lady. And so like just meeting you today and the hot mess that we started out with, and like being interrupted midway through the podcast, if I was there with you right now, I would give you a hug and I would tell you, that what you're doing and this book is just such a tremendous gift. And just like I say all the time, keep going, keep going. You matter. Your story matters. This story that you share and you carry with you and the pain is all for a purpose that you don't want. You didn't want to have to go through all that stuff, but it's also like a gift in a weird way, right?
It's hard to talk about it unless you've been through it, like you said.
Yeah.
And I really do call it treasures of the night, because it's like, you got to walk through this. Mm-hmm. And you see it, and like, there's this calmness, there's this peace about once you finally realize the purpose is to be able to give others hope, to know that there's something there that they've had. When I was working at this company after my son passed away, I had two administrative assistants who both lost their sons while I was working there. There was no coincidence.
Mm-mm.
And I mentored them. I counseled them. I was going through my grieving, and then two completely different situations. One of them was an overdose and one of them was a motorcycle accident. I mean, who would have said that? I was planted in that role for that reason. I tell myself that was more of a reason. That was the reason I was there. I mean, things like that happen, you know, I think they happen to me because I'm looking for it, because I've been so touched by so many things that I know I live in the spiritual world, and I know that what I'm going to expect is going to be something that is going to be, it's going to touch me. It's going to touch others. And that doesn't mean it's not scary. It doesn't mean it doesn't take courage.
No, it's hard. And then like, it's on to the next thing, you know, like there's no guarantees in life. You do the best you can. It's short. Can't even believe how fast my life is going. But it's like what you, the things that you do in life, it's not about like the bags and the shoes, even though I love a good bag and a good shoe. It's about like, you know, human connection, purpose, all the things that you're talking about. What, for my listeners, I want you to tell them where they can find you and what the book is called and where it's available.
Okay. The book is called The Last Flight from Havana. You could either go to my website, Marie Quintana, Quintana.com. Or you can go to Amazon and buy it there. And I would love to continue talking with you too. I feel like
I know this could be like a 2-hour podcast, and then it will be like go down again and everything will shut down. I also have to tell you, because I talk a lot about loss and grieving, and I always ask people, and you know, it's hard to talk about this stuff because it was quick at the end where we talked about your son, but do you have signs that you know he's with you? I always ask people what their sign is.
All the time. So several signs. First of all, he loved the Elton John Daniel, the song Daniel. And we used to go to the store together on Sundays, the grocery store. And there have been at least 50 times when I'm in my car driving to the grocery store and I'm by myself and the song plays out of the blue. I mean, just like I'm on a different station where Elton John doesn't play, whatever, you know, and all the words of the songs are about him. I mean, it's like I'm leaving church by myself the other day and I actually lit a candle for him and I'm in my car and I was thinking about him. I turn on the radio and there's the song. It happens so many times. I actually just go to my phone and I write it because there's been it's like hundreds of times.
Yeah. There's no coincidences, like for listeners, like look for those signs. If you're newly grieving someone, you know, I talk about it all the time. It's not a coincidence. You really have to look for the signs because they're there, especially songs. Songs are a big one. I've had guests on before and they talk up same thing. They talk about like one day they were turning on. They were in their, one lady I interviewed was in her office and like out of the blue, like she didn't even have like, she had an old record player and the song just turned on. Like that's all of them just like coming, trying to talk to us and say they're okay.
I can tell you more about this song. The day that I had to go to the funeral home to pick out where we were going to bury him, I had to go by myself. I got in my car and that Elton John song, the exact number of minutes that it plays is from here to the funeral place. I got in my car, turned on the radio, and that song started. And when I pulled into the parking lot of the funeral home, the song ended. That was the first song. That was the first time. And since then, it's 100 or more times that it plays, and it's him.
I mean, there's no coincidence for that. I'm sorry. Marie, I say this a lot because many of my past guests are my friends now, and I'm so fortunate to be able to do what I do. Thank you to my listeners that tune in every week and message me, and I love hearing from you. But like, you made my whole day today. You really did, and I want you to know that. I'm so grateful that we were able to like switch recording.
They were trying to keep away from each other.
I don't know, but I'm just truly grateful. Everyone, in closing, please follow Marie, grab her book. Where her book's available on Amazon. Can you plug what your Instagram is in case people want to follow you that way or where they can find you again?
Yes. But it's marie.quintana, mariequintana.com. Just mariequintana.com.
Okay.
You can follow me there.
And, all and the book's available on Amazon, and I can't wait to read it. And you have a huge fan in me.
Thank you.
In closing, you matter. Your story matters. Keep going, everyone. Thanks, Marie.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you. Thank you.
Judging Megan with Megan Judge.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.